This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the reminiscing voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon, Matthew. We are in person. And
yeah,
reminiscing. That is exactly
which
what
you,
we're doing.
You guessed that I would go with
I knew you'd go with that because memories. Where we are right now, memories. Some great memories. And do you know what? This is how we should do the podcast. I'm sat here just to paint the picture. We are in the Watford Hilton, which is where I'm going to talk about many memories that I've had over there. Don't look at me like that. I'm talking football memories. And I'm sat here with a glass of wine opposite you. This is how we should do the podcast.
It's a good setting.
Yeah, why don't you move to Dubai? We could do this all the time. Anyway, moving on. Yes, lots and lots of memories here because this is where, I mean, I don't even know where to start, but this is where I got told I was going to make my debut. I got pulled by Ray Lewington in just the room over there. No one can see where I'm pointing, but just over there. Got pulled by Ray Lewington to be told that you are going to be playing tonight against Preston at the age of 20, 21 to make my full debut. This is where we had end of season awards. Didn't win anything, but I remember them very vividly. Just so many memories.
I didn't think that this was where you were going to say you were told about your debut. So how did that work then? Did you used to have pre-match meetings here?
Pre-match was here, yeah. It was always at the Hilton. A lot of the away teams still stay here now. This is the hotel that they will stay. Probably 90% of teams that play against Watford will stay here. Maybe the more affluent ones might stay at the Grove, which is just around the corner. But yeah, pretty much all the teams stay here. And we used to always have pre-match here. I feel like I've come to this place more than any other hotel. Certainly, you know, back in the day, this was very much all major events at Watford did were always here. So yeah, just walking here, just flooded with memories.
Was it this particular room where the awards were?
It was this particular room, yeah. It was, and then once I think we made the Premier League, we did then move to the Grove, Stockport House. Again, anybody that doesn't know this local area, it's going to mean absolutely nothing to them. But yeah, it was the Hilton many times.
Brutal honesty about awards, because there's been a few in the past couple of weeks. You do the awards with sponsors and a select group of fans.
Yes.
Once those awards are done, are you lot looking at the door thinking, we just want to get the hell out of here and do our own end of season do?
Do you know what? It always used to go on quite a long time. It depends. Different clubs have different setups. So for us, it would always be that you'd be put on a table with the people that sponsored you. So I remember back in the day at Watford, I had my socks sponsored, shorts sponsored, shirt sponsored, gloves sponsored. So there'd be like five or six people that sponsored you individually and you would have a table with them, which I didn't mind. I quite like those situations. You can imagine some of the lads weren't overly comfortable with that situation. So I didn't mind. And then you'd obviously, it'd be a three-course meal. There'd be, you know, lots of footage going on throughout the evening. And I always quite enjoyed it because it was always like the end of the season, especially if it had been a good season. And it's just quite a nice feeling where it's that little bit more relaxed. Reminiscing over the season that had just been and having a conversation with a lot of the people that have been to see you every single game. I actually quite liked it. And then what ordinarily happened is, yeah, once the awards were over, some would shoot off, but you'd be surprised. A lot of the lads would wait and stay until the very end. But yeah, it was always quite enjoyable.
Nice. And then
I remember once I went a little bit too far. And this is actually a story. I think I've told this maybe not on this podcast, but on Ben's podcast, because I did then go back to his. I was staying at his that night and I didn't feel particularly well in the evening, and I don't think his wife has ever forgiven me for the stain that I'm sure is still on their couch. And it was a stain. I must explain, there's a couple of different stains that could be. It was the one that's not so bad. Let's just go with that. And that was too much red wine.
Brilliantly,
I mean, I love that your mind's gone straight there. That says more about you than it does about me.
We have got, so this is going to be quite a quick podcast because there wasn't loads of action, of course, over the weekend. But we've got some correspondence from a couple of weeks ago because we didn't do a pod last week. We had a little break and we thought we'd do the final. Or this might be the penultimate Between the Sticks. We've got the FA Cup final and the Championship playoff final to take place. Mm-hmm. So we might do one next week and maybe a review of the season in goalkeeping. But some correspondence came in after the Champions League semi-final second leg between Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. And this was regarding Manuel Neuer. The email was from a gentleman named Stephen Drewfeld. He says, "Hi GKU, long time listener, but first time emailing in. Just wanted to say how much I felt for Manuel Neuer last night. To be the servant he has been over the years, and in that game alone he had kept Bayern in it. Seeing that first goal go in was horrible. You knew exactly what people would be saying, and all the usual howler shouts were seen on social media. Personally, I think in such a huge game and at such a crucial time, he could have played it safer by batting the ball to safety, either wide of the goal or straight back out again. That said, he backed himself to smother the shot, which he should do, and maybe parrying it away would have been a cop-out. I don't know, it's a tough call. Play safe and have the moment forgotten, or trust your ability and make a rare error that everyone remembers, the typical life of a goalkeeper. Would love to hear your thoughts. Keep up the good work, and thanks for making my journeys to work more bearable."
Oh, well,
a lovely email.
That is a really nice email. Thank you very much. And do you know what? I agree with a lot of what's said there. The bit that frustrates me, I guess, with a moment like this, frustrates, saddens, whatever word you want to use, is that I've said this before, and it's something that still bugs me now, is you bring up a famous goalkeeper's name from the past, and I'll always give like a David Seaman, who played, what, 700-800 games? And if I said, you know, give me two moments you remember about David Seaman, three moments, you might get the pesky Salido save. They might say that. They'll always say Naeem, they'll always say Rondinho. And it's like, for 800 games, why are those the moments that people will mention? And my worry is that with the Neuer, this might now be one of those moments. And as you say, he's been an unbelievable servant, won everything. He's been fantastic. And look, it's just one of those moments. It can happen any minute in the game. It's skipped up off the turf a little bit. He's not quite balanced. If you watch it again, he's leaning back ever so slightly. It's quite a basic error for him. And I get the point about he could have just batted it away. Yeah, I think, look, you're trained over and over in that situation when the ball pitches in front to do the scoop technique and fall on it, but he doesn't quite get his weight in the right place. Now, there could be all sorts of reasons for that. Again, this happens in a split second. He's moving just beforehand to get that set and to execute that technique. It's not easy by any stretch, but at the same time, of course, someone like him, he'll have done that 1,000 times, 10,000 times in his life. And yeah, 99.9% of the time, he does it without any issue. And it's Sod's Law. How often do we see it that in a big moment like that, it bounces off you? It could go anywhere. It could be cleared and we don't ever think about it ever again. Of course, it ends up in the back of the net and it becomes a thing.
So many big saves in that game as well, which is classic Manuel Neuer. But thank you for that, Stephen. Much appreciated. If you'd like to get in touch with us like Stephen did, very easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union, on email hello@goalkeepersunion.net, and on our phone number 0750 3673 020. And I thought worth bringing this up too, because it turns out from looking at the trends, people listen to this Between the Sticks podcast like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks down the line. So it's out of date, but they still listen to it. It's fascinating.
That is. I like that. There you go.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Premier League was decided at the weekend, Richard, and we are going to start where it was decided and won by Manchester City. Man City 3, West Ham 1. Now, the goal that effectively clinched the title was scored by Rodri. And I feel like this is nitpicking, but there are instances few and far between this weekend to talk about technically from a goalkeeper's standpoint. So we'll just flag it. The third goal, scored by Rodri, beyond Alphonse Areola, came through some bodies. Error, no error. What's your take on it?
It's one that you could see straight away. The reaction he gave was key to me, in that you saw him straight away get up and he obviously couldn't see the ball when it struck. And what's happened, you often see goalkeepers do this, and you have to do this to an extent, is if you can't see the ball, you can't make a save. So just before it struck, and correct me if I'm wrong, it looks like he just leans to his right ever so slightly just to see if he can get a sight of the ball, because it is coming through bodies. And effectively it's that slight lean that's killed him, because if he's set and he's neutral, of course he saves this. We've seen him make some unbelievable saves this season, and certainly with the ability that he's got, this would be quite a comfortable save for him. But I think it is that's the bit that, you know, I heard a couple of commentators question. I was watching Sky Sports News at the time, as well as having the game on. I had my split screen on, but I was listening to Sky Sports News, and they were certainly giving him a bit of criticism for it. But I think that was the key detail for me, is that he can't see the ball, so he's had to lean to his right. The moment you do that, you just can't get back on yourself. It doesn't matter how athletic you are, how powerful you are, which he's amongst the best when it comes to that side of things. He just couldn't get himself back quick enough to get a hand on it. So look, is it an error? is one that he'll be annoyed with, disappointed with. But if he has that situation over and over and over, I think he probably does the same thing over and over, because you have to try and get sight of the ball somehow when it's struck. And unfortunately for him, had he leant to the left, he probably would have made the save.
Speaking of Rodri, I've got some quotes for you. Three saves, I have no words, he said. Simply incredible, and we have the best goalkeeper in the world. I'll add to that some quotes from Pep Guardiola. One-on-one, he's one of the best goalkeepers I've seen in my life. He's so reliable. Who are they talking about?
I'm assuming, you would think, Edison, but of course, I am assuming they are talking about Stefan Ortega.
They are indeed. So, yes, let's talk about Stefan Ortega, and let's talk about the performance in 20 to 25 minutes that he made against Tottenham in midweek.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we talk a lot about that number two position as a goalkeeper. And it is, when you look at it, for me, one of the most difficult positions to fill for a team. You know, I have a lot of conversations on this front where you talk about that perfect setup of your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, depending on if you've got young lads going out on loan. To find a good number two is so, so difficult. Someone who's happy to wait in the wings. They might go, like he's done previously, long periods of time without playing. But you just never know when that chance is going to come. And I'm so pleased for him in that it's come in such a big moment. He's obviously kept himself right. That's key. You know, he's obviously training at such a high level. He's ready for when that moment comes. And that is, you know, one of those situations where you talk about opportunity. You know, an opportunity's come because of the injury to Ederson, and to take it with both hands like he did. I mean, and of course, that massive save he made towards the end at Tottenham. Brilliant technique in the moment. Got the distances just right. Made it so difficult for the attacking player. And it's just not easy to... It's hard enough coming on in a game at the best of times. You know, I've done it a few times in my career. And it's difficult. You come on, naturally you're a little bit cold to get up to the speed of the game. But every time I've seen him, obviously his distribution is fantastic, but he's shown he's got that side to his game as well. And to come up with a big moment like that, and came up with a couple of big moments against West Ham as well, to be fair, excellent. Really, really top. And yeah, you kind of feel now, the only issue now City will have, and you've seen this elsewhere with Kelleher and with other goalkeepers, is now, are they happy to stay in that role? Because it's moments like this that will then alert other teams in the Premier League, I'm sure, and look at them and think, do you know what? Actually, we can offer them a spot where they're going to get to play every single week. Is that something that might tempt them away?
There are so many ifs, buts and maybes throughout a season. But that save, the one that you mentioned there from Heung-min Son when he was 1-1, that has effectively won City the title, because if they don't get back into that game, and who knows, they could have then scored and won the game and it is what it is. But the likelihood that Arsenal win on Saturday, which they did, and Arsenal win the title, that save has effectively won City the title.
Mm. It's that quote from Any Given Sunday, isn't it? Inches everywhere. Right in front of your face. No, but they are.
Are we talking about being back here again?
Oh, dear. I worry about your mind. No, but it is. Look, it's sliding doors. Like, this is, and it's one of the beauties of it's one of the reasons we love the game as much as we do, in that, yeah, look, you know, people can say what they want to say about Arsenal, and you know, Arsenal were fantastic back end of the season. I know that, was it the game against Villa, you look back on, you think, oh, could this, could that, but as you say, that save, you know, I know it's been likened to Martinez in the World Cup final. You know, it's like one moment, 1 second, and that essentially has changed the history books. You know, and it is. It's one of those moments. It'll be a moment that we talked about. And I love it when it happens for a goalkeeper, because it is rare. Like, there's so many things that have to align for you to have a moment like that. But obviously the key is that not only when that moment comes, you have to be ready and to have the calmness of mind to do everything right and to produce the technique that he did in that moment to make that save. There's so many things, those thousands of hours worth of practice in order to be ready for that moment. And it's so nice when something like that does happen, because again, that will be a moment that City fans talk about forevermore.
So if you were Stefan Ortega at this stage in your career, so early 30s now, he spent two, very good seasons as Man City's number two. Of course, all the usual shouts now come, oh, he deserves to be number one somewhere. He should be a number one somewhere. He was offered to a few clubs in the summer of him arriving at Man City. He ended up going to City. He is the two. If you were him now, what would you do?
I can't answer that, because... And do you know what? This might sound, and people listening in, you know, you think it's all about playing. And of course, you know, I look back and I talk a lot about my moments. That's how I can relate, in that when I look back at my career, I don't ever remember a game where I sat on the bench. Like, I remember the big moments I had in big games where you go home that evening or that afternoon and you're absolutely buzzing. Like, you cannot beat that. So if it was me and you've just done that and there's interest elsewhere in the Premier League to go and be a number one, I probably would have done it. But at the same time, everybody is different. You know, he might love the fact that he's arguably the world's best number two, or certainly be in position in that category at the moment. That might be enough. He might be really happy to be in that role. And if he is, you're at, you know, arguably the world's best football club at the moment. No, they haven't won the Champions League this year, but, you know, I think they're certainly amongst the top two or three in the world. And he might love the role that he's got there. And if he does, then he can do it for another 5, 6, 7 years and enjoy doing that. Or if it's one where this has just given him that taste and actually put him on the map even more, of course he was on the map, but even more so, I think, because it's not just these couple of games. The other games he's played this season, we've highlighted a few games where, I mean, distribution is very much up there with Ederson. And the fact that he's shown he's got different sides to his game, it might be that another Premier League club comes in and he thinks, yeah, do you know what? Now's my time. I want to go and do that.
So he's the two. The number three, of course, is Scott Carson. Mm. How's his head this morning?
I mean, and do you know what? I love this. Like, and again, it's go back to sliding doors. I know we're talking about it about when we speak about games and moments in games, but I think of careers. You know, I always reference Lee Grant as one where things weren't going so well at Derby, gets himself over to Stoke as the number three, and then Jack Butland gets injured. Shay Given comes in, doesn't quite work out for him. Suddenly, Granty plays a full season, player of the season, and then finds himself at Man United. Like, going back to sliding doors, if that move to Stoke doesn't happen, if Butland doesn't get the injury, if this, it might have been that he leaves Derby and he might have had to go down to League One to get some games. And before you know it, he's playing for Man United. And similarly, Scott Carson, where, you know, look, obviously well documented, he had some tough times, certainly the whole England thing, which was an absolute shambles when I look back on that. And that, just me looking, like talking about Manuel Neuer, like, that was one of the most sorry that I felt for a goalkeeper, where, you know, I remember the night, was it Croatia, was it? And it was a horrible, horrible night. And of course, that goal goes in. He got absolutely hammered. I remember Piers Morgan saying some stupid things the next day. And like, this was a young goalkeeper at the time. So for me to see him now, you know, because at that moment, if you'd have said, like, he'll go on, he went abroad, obviously, and he played the number of games he played. And now he's been at City, absolutely adored by everybody, won all these trophies. Like, I'm so happy for him, because I can only imagine what he must have gone through after that Croatia game. And you see so many goalkeepers that go through a tough time like that and never bounce back.
So City, the champions, 4 in a row. Runners-up Arsenal won their final game of the season, 2-1 against Everton. Before we come to David Raya as a whole this season, lovely hands in the second half. Great save from Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Enjoyed this. Really enjoyed this, because it's a lovely strike, struck it so well, and he's like flew up to his left hand side, good feet, good spring, and to hold it, you know, that is one that, and I'm sure there must be a photo or two out there where he's full stretch, that just feels so satisfying as a goalkeeper, where, and you might do it in training, but how often does it actually happen in a game that you're full stretch and you pluck it out of the top corner like that? I thought it was a brilliant save.
So I think it was 16 clean sheets to finish the season. Golden Glove Award for David Raya. Now all said and done, now the dust is somewhat settled, not fully settled, because we don't know what's going to happen in the summer. What is your take on that whole situation from when it first happened and we spoke about it every week on the podcast to now?
I haven't changed my opinion on it, in that I think it could have been handled differently, which would have made it an easier transition for David Raya. That's my, I suppose, my take on it, because I think had Ramsdale a move last summer, because in the way that it's played out at the end, you know, really frustrating season for Aaron Ramsdale. You're not going to have a chance now, really, of playing for England, whereas he could well have had a great chance had he had a full season under his belt. So I can imagine it's really frustrating for him. So I don't think that was handled brilliantly. And we go back to, you know, your ones and twos, and where it's worked, again, so well with Ortega and Ederson in particular. So I don't necessarily agree with the way it played out. At the same time, that's always Arsenal's target. They've always wanted David Raya. That's quite well known. So whether it was just a case they could only get him at that point and that was how it had to be, I don't know. I think from David Raya's point of view, it made it very difficult for him to begin with. There were a few tough moments. I do think then as the season's gone on, he's grown more and more. Again, there's been a few tough moments, which there will be given the style of play that they look to play, but he is very, very well suited to what they want to do. So I think going into next season, if Ramsdale moves on as we'd expect him to, then I think it will become easier for David Raya. But look, if someone had said at that moment they signed him that you're going to finish the season with the most clean sheets in the league, you're going to 2 points off the title, you know, go to the last game. I think a lot of people would have taken that. Of course, Arsenal have increased the number of points that they got last season. They've set a record for the number of wins. So look, I think on the whole, in terms of him individually, it's been a fantastic move and it will only get better. And I think that going into next season, if there isn't that whole debate between the one and two, then people will just accept he is the number one. And I think he's done more than enough to show that he's a number one. And it can't have been easy at times because commentators were on him pretty much since day dot. You know, they were looking for any fault they possibly could. I know we speak a lot about your Gary Nevilles, Carragher's, but Neville in particular, you can just sense when certain commentators aren't really having someone for whatever reason. Yet the funny thing was, it really felt like he was having him massively when he was at Brentford, but something shifted, whether it was the Ramsdale factor, I'm not sure. So I'd like to think for him going into next season now that he's really set this platform, he'll be in a really good place going into next season.
Okay, just a final few names to mention in the Premier League before we finish. Dean Henderson, good to mention him because we haven't really spoken too much about Dean Henderson this season. A couple of nice moments in their incredible victory over Aston Villa on the final day. Denied Moussa Diaby twice, close to a klaxon as well for the final goal, I think, scored by Eberechi Eze. Neto, very unlucky for what was probably the best final day goal you're likely to see in the Premier League, scored by Moses Caicedo. James Shea coming on for Luton, that was a nice touch. Also, a couple of nice moments for him. And good to see Nick Pope back in for Newcastle.
Yep, I think we'll start with James Shea because delighted for him. Yeah, really nice touch. Good on two fronts. I think Kaminsky's been brilliant for Luton this season. For the fans to be able to give him a standing ovation like they did, I thought that was great. And then for James Shea, yeah, huge. You know, he's had obviously bad injuries, but he is Luton through and through. And to come on, and not only come on, but what a cameo. You know, great top hand save. Read the game once very well once as well. And to come on and do what he did, yeah, it's a memory that will last for the rest of his life. So delighted for him. And yeah, it's one of them as well when you come on, because it's not just coming off for a couple of minutes. He came off for a good 20 minutes or so and put in a really good account of himself. So delighted for him. Dean Henderson, as you mentioned, a couple of really good saves in this one. Been a funny season for him, I guess, with obviously injuries again and back and forth with Sam Johnson. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens there going into next season. Neto, fully agree, nothing he can do. He read the game very well. Good sliding tackle, gets to the next ball, gets it past the halfway line. You would like to think your job's done. And then Caicedo to smash it from 60 yards into the top corner. You just can't account for that, but very little he could do. The bit that he'll be frustrated at, I did read somewhere that the XG on that was something like 0.01. So that will mean then for Neto, he gets like a minus one for that. So again, that's where the stats do come in and can sometimes kill a goalkeeper. And lastly, I've forgotten the other name
you mentioned. The other one was Nick Pope. Good to see him back in.
Absolutely. No, do you know what? Because I'll be honest, I didn't expect him to come back this season as well, given that it is that late in the season now. You kind of feel, you see this often where lads will get themselves fit, say, you know, end of April. And a lot of the time the physio department will just say, look, just leave it. Look, you know, get the end of the season out of the way, have the summer, come back firing in pre-season. It happened to me, actually. I dislocated my shoulder and I was fit just before the end of the season. But they're like, what's the point? And I think at the time we didn't have anything to play for. So that was that. Where I'm pleased on this front, actually, is that he's shown he's fully fit, solid performance, and it will be really interesting to see whether he's then included for England now. Now that he is available and he's shown that he's match fit and ready, I would assume that's a very important game for him to give himself a good chance for the summer.
So we'll touch on the playoffs. So the two finals that took place in the EFL over the weekend were the League One playoff final and the League Two playoff final. So we'll start with League Two first. Corey Adai, quite the narrative surrounding the giant goalkeeper now. Really good penalty save in the second leg against MK Dons, an 8-1 aggregate scoreline. Nice for Philip Marshall to come in for that second leg. Cheers. As well. Cheers. Everyone's talking about his footwork too as well from the first leg of that semi-final. But in the final, did well, denied a penalty that was given and then taken away. And everyone talking about his XGA stats as well, which are quite remarkable. Close to 20 goals prevented this season.
Wow. Yeah, and do you know what? I'm delighted for him because not a lot of people probably know his backstory, and I'll be honest, I don't know it in depth, but you kind of see where he came through at Coventry. He's kind of been, I say here, there and everywhere, but obviously had a bit of a tough time, and I actually saw a really nice post that Steve Hale put out, his goalkeeper coach, about him, which I liked. And he even referenced the fact that he's had, you know, a lot of criticism over the last couple of years. And it's one of these where I look at Corey Odoi. He is someone that has got everything. 6'7", moves well, has got all the clubs in the bag. Like, you feel like he's got the ability to go on and play, certainly championship, if not higher. But obviously one or two things that haven't gone his way over the last few years. So to have a season like this, which, by the way, he wasn't a full season, did come out for a period of time, but won his place back. And to have the second half of the season and just keep growing game after game, which, again, credit to Steve Hale for that as well, because goalkeeper coach will obviously play a huge part of that. But to then have a moment like this and step up in a game like this, and games like this, certainly the playoff games, massive well done to him. And actually the penalty that, and rightly not awarded, I thought he did really well on, because he was stitched up to an extent, finds himself at the edge of the box, had a decision to make, drops a touch, holds his position, and it's then as the player goes to go around him, just gets that toe to it. And again, that's that 6'7" frame, the speed of movement to be able to get his toe to it and toe it away. So it's absolutely the right decision, and it was excellent goalkeeping, because 9 times out of 10 the player, especially when you're that far forward, which he had no chance with because of where the ball ended up, he had to be 16 yards out. Normally that's an easy one for the striker to walk around you and put it into an empty net, but played it really, really well in that moment, and big moment in that game, and delighted for him.
He did take a gamble as well, didn't he? So it was prior to his move to Crawley, prior to coming back, he went abroad. Esbjerg, I believe, was the team. Forgive me for not knowing the country that that is in, but he took a gamble in going abroad, playing, and you are in danger there of being out of sight, out of mind. So to then come back and restake his claim has been impressive.
Really impressive. Because look, and you know, I feel like I've had this conversation a lot recently about pathways and journeys, and you know, there's so many moments where a goalkeeper coming through, they can have all the ability in the world, they get to a point, but at some point you need that pathway, you need that loan journey, whether that's your National League, League Two, League One, and make your way up, and then you soon find your level. There's so many goalkeepers where it just doesn't happen for whatever reason. And I kind of felt like he was amongst that category, and obviously he's gone abroad to try and make it work. Come back to Crawley, and again, not as the guaranteed starter, but to then see how it's gone, and now he's very much on the map. The number of games he's got, people have seen, and again, this is where the playoffs are great as well. There's so many eyes on you, and that's where certainly if you can have those big games in the playoffs, which largely is down to mentality, you need that little bit of luck, of course, but for him to have done what he's done in these few games, it's going to stand him in such good stead, and he's still such a good age. I'll be really curious to see what happens with him this summer. No doubt Crawley will be keen for him to continue with them on the journey into League One, but my gut says there might be one or two that are asking questions.
Okay, and speaking of all eyes being on you in a playoff final, all eyes would have been on Jamie Cumming in Oxford's victory over Bolton, but we barely saw him. I mean, I don't think I've seen a goalkeeper, and I know that obviously there's still plenty to do, but in terms of match action occurring in your area, collecting crosses, making saves, all the good stuff, he barely had anything to do in that contest.
It was bizarre because Bolton going into the game, such favourites. You know, and by the way, and Oxford's a team that I do keep a close eye on. I think I might have mentioned this, but my dad used to be a director at Oxford United. So it's certainly a club. And I was born in Oxford as well, Matt. So certainly a club that I keep close to my heart and one that I'll always keep an eye out for. And I give them massive credit, and I give Jamie Cumming massive credit for a few different reasons I'll explain in a minute, but certainly Oxford in particular, where, and it was when they lost 5-0 to Bolton not so long ago, and you looked at it and with the greatest of respect, you thought at that point they're just going to drift into mid-table, had a great start to the season, just wasn't meant to be. But then to bounce back and have the run they did towards the end of the season, to get the win on the final day, to then make it into the playoffs, huge credit to them for that, to then beat Peterborough home and away and only concede one goal, and Jamie Cumming was excellent in those games in particular, to then have the opportunity to play in that final and then to play as well as they did, just absolutely shut Bolton down, fully deserved the victory. Huge credit to Oxford and for Jamie Cumming as well, because from memory, I think he had a bit of a tough time the last time he played in the playoffs when he was at MK. They should have got promoted that season. He was excellent that season. They got a ridiculous number of points, but I think it was Ipswich and Plymouth that got even more points, but I think they were like 90-something points and should have got automatic, didn't, lost in the playoffs. But for him, and it's been a tough journey where he's had so many League One games now, but to then come to Oxford where They were struggling a little bit at the time, and the performances that he's put in, certainly back end of the season, to get to this final game. The other part to this as well, from a personal point of view for him, was of course it was Jamie Cumming against Nathan Baxter to Chelsea, or certainly Nathan was ex-Chelsea. They've known each other for a long, long time. So for those two to have faced off against each other, and just a huge moment for him to now get promoted to the Championship. Of course, it'd be interesting to see what happens going into next season, because he still is at Chelsea. But you would think, and again, might be wrong, but you'd think that Oxford will try and bring him in. I'm sure he'll want to stay and have that challenge of the Championship, because he's been waiting for that for a long, long time. He must be the best part of a couple hundred games now in League One, and surely now is his time to go and get those Championship games.
And another great goalkeeping story from a slightly different angle to that of Corey Adai, but you've mentioned his loan spells, had numerous League Two, League One, was then in the wilderness somewhat at Chelsea, I guess, this season. No chance of any first team, realistic first team opportunities. So spent the first half of the season back at Chelsea. And then obviously James Beadle moves on to Sheffield Wednesday in January, opens up a spot. Jamie Cumming takes that. In terms of a successful loan spell, I mean, it's right up there.
Oh, massively. And at one point, like I say, you're looking at it, and this was certainly no fault of Jamie Cumming, but you look at this when he's joined them, they were doing as well as they were, but they just started a bit of a decline ever so slightly just before Christmas. He obviously comes in the January, and then at one point, I want to say they were eighth or ninth, and they were just starting to fade away, and you thought, okay, this probably isn't going to look great on his CV. But that's where I come back to mentality, because I just think that, you know, at that point when, and I was amongst them, I hold my hands up, I'd written them off to an extent. When they started to drop, I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be, you know, another one of those seasons for Oxford. And that's where him and the team showed such togetherness to then bounce back end of the season, get the points needed to make the playoffs. And now it's ended up being, as you say, an unbelievable loan. And this, here you go, I feel like sliding doors might be the the main theme of this particular podcast.
We'll end on Aqua, shall we?
Aqua?
Yeah.
What is that?
Aqua, Turn Back Time, the theme tune to the film Sliding Doors.
Okay, I did not know that. You see, you just referenced something and you've gone over my head. This is what you do, Matt. I'd love to know how many listening in actually knew what you were referencing there. I hope it's not just me.
I reckon a few will definitely know that.
I think that'll be the theme of this podcast, because look, if they end up finishing 9th, 10th, on paper you'd look at it and perhaps it's not the best loan for XYZ reasons. Has it really then increased the CV, increased the stock? This just shows you where, like we said about the likes of Corey Adai and a few of the other goalkeepers we mentioned on this, you only need that one season, that one game sometimes, and it can really propel things in a massive way. And I've not necessarily the final for Jamie, because he didn't have, as you say, loads to do in the final, but I think back into the season where he's had some huge games, Peterborough I thought was excellent home and away, and then to get promoted and now legitimately find himself in the Championship if he does stay or goes elsewhere in the Championship, I'm delighted for him, because you see so many examples where maybe it doesn't quite work out in that way. And so often, very little to do with the goalkeeper. Again, there's a lot of other players on the field. There's only so much you can do. And no, but from his point of view, delighted this has happened for him. And I really hope he gets his chance in the Championship next season.
And perhaps he might tell his story one day on this very podcast.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will.
Come on, Jamie. Are you listening? Come on. Right, Richard, that is us pretty much done. Apart from that, plenty of goalkeepers released, of course, retained and released lists out now. Were you ever in one of those?
That's a good question. I must have been. Technically, do you know what? I'll take this as a, give myself a pat on the back. I don't think I was ever released.
So
ever.
Never a free agent?
No. Well,
never released from a club.
No, because even when I left Watford, I had another contract on the table, which I turned down at the time because, going back to the Stefan Ortega example, I wanted to go out and get some games. So I went to Brentford and didn't get games for a long period of time.
Regretted it ever since. No, you haven't. But the opportunity came up at Watford after you left.
That's right, which was, and again, that's another, probably a story for another day, but you see that so often where players get to a point where they decide, I need to move on now, and then, in my case, it was Sod's Law that 2-3 games in the following season, I think it was Scott Loach, ended up coming out of the team at Watford, and I remember looking, because I'd lost my place at Brentford already in pre-season, and sort of looking, thinking, do you know, if I'd have just stayed, this again, sliding doors. Had I have decided to stay at Watford, probably would have got a testimonial, so on and so forth, but I look back and it was probably the best decision I made. Certainly the way that it played out and that first season in particular, the amount of games I ended up playing and some of the memories, etc. But no, I was never going back to the point, never on a release list because, and then even obviously when I finally called it a day, I did call my retirement quite early. So yes, that's probably why I don't know. I don't think I was ever on one.
Okay. Well, GK's on their way. will soon be upon us, which we enjoy doing. Only one to name. Goalkeepers and goalkeeper coaches, by the way. There is going to be a huge merry-go-round this summer. But only one GK on their way to speak of for now, because that has been announced. And that's Victor Johansson, Rotherham to Stoke on a 3-year deal.
Yeah, big move for him. And it's quite late. I know that technically the window hasn't opened, but normally things have happened by now. So this does feel a bit later this year, but there's so much that needs to happen. You know, we're obviously goalkeeping geeks when it comes to looking up and down the country as to where the potential opportunities might be. And I don't know the exact number. You probably know the exact number, but certainly Prem down to even Conference South, where we look, there's well over 100 slots that need to be filled. So normally by now you'd have more than one. But to speak about that one, great move for him. It'd be really interesting. Obviously, they've got a strong goalkeeping department now. They've kept Frankie Fielding, obviously Jack Bonham there. Now Victor Johansson, where Stoke have had the loans last season with Travers and Everson in particular. So yeah, I think it's a good move for him. And this is massive credit to him, because it was a tough season for Rotherham. And this is where you often see, we talk about it a lot, where teams down the bottom will quite regularly change their goalkeepers. Look in the Premier League, whether it's Burnley, whether it's Sheffield United, you look in the Championship, similar things have happened at a lot of the clubs. But someone like Johansson, despite them doing as badly as they've done at times, he's always been getting 7, 8 out of 10 in the paper. Some of the saves he's made have been fantastic. So I'm really curious to see now, if he goes to Stoke and they are that much better next season, given the budget they've got, how he'll perform, because a lot's been said about him. Last 2 years in particular, he's been excellent in the Championship. So I think it's a really good move for him. And as I mentioned, Stoke have now got a very, very strong goalkeeping department.
And one man who won't be going anywhere, because he is finished, apart from one game next weekend, the Scottish Cup final. And what a game to finish your career on, Rangers versus Celtic. Joe Hart got a lovely send-off in his final league game.
Yeah, delighted for it. I mean, what can we say? It's been an extraordinary career. And again, probably the word I'd use to describe Joe Hart would be resilience. You know, you think of all the highs he had at Man City, and then he's had a bit of a journey since then, and to finish in the way that he has with the titles with Celtic and the love that he's rightly getting now, because I felt like there was a period of time where, credit to him that he stuck in there, obviously went abroad for a period of time, was a couple of different clubs in the Premier League, and now to have found that role at Celtic, watching him, you still feel like he could have several more years if he wants, but I quite like the fact as well, it's kind of similar to, I'm going to mention Schmeichel again. I haven't mentioned him for a few episodes. But Schmeichel leaving Man United, although of course he did come back and play for City and Villa. We'll forget about that for now. But to leave on such a high is quite nice and quite rare, I find, for any player, let alone a goalkeeper. But to leave on the high that he's doing now and to cap off what's been a phenomenal career. And, you know, it's quite an interesting one personally, because obviously I'm a few years older than him, but I remember when he was coming through, so much was made of him, and to see the journey that he's gone on, and also the journey his game's gone on as well, because how you'd have described him as a 19, 20 year old is very different to how you describe him now in terms of strengths and assets and whatever else. But no, delighted for him to finish with a flourish in the way that he has, and I'd like to think he'll be one of the greats that we talk about for a long time. And actually, I've got to add one more bit to that. I'm really hopeful. I've heard rumours, I think this might be true, that he's going to be on the panel for the Euros as one of the commentators, one of the pundits, which is really, really good. We need a goalkeeper up there. So I hope he now is that guy that is there, whether it's Sky Sports News, whether it's Match of the Day. I don't even care. Just get him up there. Let him talk about goalkeeping.
Excellent.
There you go.
Love that. What a way to finish. Okay, that's good stuff, Richard. Like I said, we might be back next week. There's the Scottish Cup final. There's the FA Cup final. There's the Championship player final. And our review of the season. Your favourite goalkeepers from all four tiers and beyond, okay?
Okay, I'll look forward to that. Well, we've managed to drag this out good 40 minutes. I thought it was going to be about 12 minutes.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was going to be a quick one.
We've spoke absolute nonsense that's for goalkeeping. 40 minutes. That's what we do.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.
Wait!